Our next speaker is Peter Nischa from Rutgers University.
Well, I'm also going to be talking about tomatoes, but unfortunately I don't have any pictures of the roots. And this being a plant breeding session, I'm not actually a plant breeder. I'm a county agent in northern New Jersey. I do a lot of applied extension work and a little bit of applied research, and I do a lot of work with Dr. Tom Orton, our plant breeder, our tomato breeder at Rutgers, and also on this project is Jim Simon, our lab person with his graduate student. I call this kind of a cautionary tale, and this starts out way back into the 1930s when we had a breeder, Lyman Schermerhorn at Rutgers, who was the one that developed the famous Rutgers tomato. And that was released in 1934 to much fanfare. And just kind of going over a little bit of the history, that was developed in a joint project with Rutgers New Jersey Agricultural Experiment Station and the Campbell Soup Company, which is stationed headquarters still in Camden, New Jersey. Most of the production is in other parts of the country. It originated from a cross between JTT and Marglobe, Campbell Soup varieties that at the time. In some of the release, it talks about it being crack-resistant, firm, and uniform color. Probably at that time, that would be considered their version of crack-resistant firm. By today's standards, it wouldn't be that crack-resistant firm or uniform in color. But it was used both at that time for fresh marketing and processing. The same varieties were used for both. And really, it became widely known. And I saw one paper that said it was planted on about 80% of the acres at one point worldwide was the Rutgers variety. Don't tell the president of the university, but at one point I think we were better known as a tomato than a university. Hopefully we've caught up with that. But has since been replaced by modern hybrids and more processing types. And that's just a picture of the cross. Again, a typical round red tomato. You can see some cracking on the Rutgers there, so not as quite as crack resistant as the modern hybrids are now. But move forward to the early 2000s, and as an agent and some of the specialists and folks at Rutgers, we were getting a lot of calls about a hybrid variety that was released in the 60s called Ramapo. And so it had been on the market for years and then dropped by seed companies. And if you know consumers in New Jersey, they're very passionate about tomatoes. They're very passionate about tomato flavor, and so they wanted this older hybrid. Luckily, Bernie Pollock, the breeder, in the 60s was still around. We got the parent lines, and Dr. Orton and Dr. Garrison at Rutgers remade that cross, and we were able to actually re-release that hybrid. And that created a lot of press and publicity. Again, consumers are passionate. So a lot of press around the state about us re-releasing a good-tasting tomato. People are passionate and are concerned about tomato flavor these days with modern hybrids. So there was a lot of press and publicity, and that got the attention of some of the folks at Campbell's Soup still in Camden. And so we were doing some work with them and looking at tomato flavor and talking to a couple folks, and particularly Dot Hall here. We were talking about some things, and she said, wouldn't it be interesting if we kind of went back in time and remade that cross that made the Rutgers tomato and see what we got today? And so Tom Orton and I thought it was a great idea. Tom went ahead and made that cross. We were also very hopeful that Campbell's Soup would, you know, give us $1 million for this project to get their positive PR out of it. Shortly after that, Campbell's has had big reorganizations. Dot Hall is no longer with them. Bill Bangs is no longer with them. So no $1 million, unfortunately. But we went about to look at remaking the cross. Tom Orton remade the cross. We got seed or plants from Campbell's Soup. They had a seed vault. They had the open pollinated parent lines of JTD and Marglobe. Knowing if they were exactly the same as the 1934 JTD and Marglobe, there's no way to know. There wasn't genetic fingerprinting at that point, but we got the best they had that's been saved over generations. Tom made the F1. We went on and he made the segregating F2 population and planted 225 plants at my research facility in North Jersey. One of the keys of my work with Tom is New Jersey is very divergent in soil types and climate, and so the northern part of the state has heavier silt loam types of soils, and the south very sandy and a warmer climate. So varieties that perform well in the south don't always perform in the north. So we work, and I do the trials in the north, and he does the trials in the south. So Tom went ahead and he was selfing the material over the winters to get F3. We were looking at field performance plant type, trying to look for a more modern plant type and performance, and focusing in on a high sugar acid balance. That's what consumers tell us they want in the tomato. That's what they tell us is the Jersey tomato flavor that they're looking for. Went from 225 selected down to a population of 14 to down to 5. And then in 2015, we did some field trials with the last three. We did some replicated yield trials, some master gardener trials. The idea here, we were using antique genetics, so the idea was that we were going to generate a garden-type variety. We weren't looking to supplant commercial varieties. We did a lot of consumer taste tests. And luckily, as planned, we were able to release a variety and identify one of them as Rutgers 250 in 2016 to commemorate the 250th anniversary of Rutgers University. So that worked out well. We got a lot of tremendous press and publicity for doing it for the university. Negate some other negative things that sometimes come out about the football team and other things. We redid the release paper with the scientific breeding. Probably these days always there's the concern about GMOs, but it was a traditional breeding. So we kind of redid that as a fun thing and created the positive publicity. At that same time, about the time we were looking at it for master gardeners and gardeners, I said to Tom, this particular selection that we made, the couple of selections we made, had a bit more firmness than I thought of Marglobe and JTD, which I questioned a bit. But so I said maybe our local growers could utilize it in their farming operations as a very specialty item and correspondingly get some sales out of it at the same time. Unfortunately, Ian has a fairly large blossom scar, and you're selling tomatoes upside down, and that's what the consumer looks at it. And so this grower was not satisfied, and most of them figure that the blossom scar with that antique genetics is too large for commercial sales. So that hasn't worked out. However, most of the consumers that we tested it with said it had good flavor, and again, the Rutgers 250 and the original Rutgers is still grown by gardeners known for its flavor. And so at that time, we were also looking at a lot of the Harry Klee's work out of Florida, looking at volatile compounds and trying to relate that to flavor. What are the volatiles that are given off that relate to good flavor? And so we were asking the question, what are the volatile compounds coming off of the original Rutgers, the Rutgers 250, that are imparting good flavor? And so we worked with Dr. Jim Simon's lab to start to approach that and start to look at the flavor compounds coming off the Rutgers 250. Dr. Simon has a Shimatsu gas chromatograph and headspace analysis materials and the library for looking at compounds. I'm not going to present the specific compounds today. We were hoping to have some more data. The results on the specifics of the compounds have been kind of inconsistent, and we have another run ready to go. And I was hoping it would be ready for today, but has not been run yet and ready for to confirm with some checks what the compound's coming off. But after we looking at the scans run from the fruit, you can see there's, if we're looking at the Rutgers 250 in the F8 generation compared to JTT, a lot of the similar peaks, but you do see a different peak from the Rutgers 250 there compared to JTT. Marglobe has its own peak, and then the Rutgers 250 has some similarities and differences with the volatile compounds coming off of that. And then we overlaid Rutgers 250 with Marglobe NJT, and we're seeing this peak from Rutgers 250 that does not belong to Marglobe and JTD. So that really raised the question of what's going on, why does, what, if it's not coming from either parent, where does this peak come from? And then we compared the Rutgers 250, the F8 generation, and the F1 of JDD Marglobe, and that peak does not exist in the F1 either. So at this point, we're wondering, you know, there must be some other genetic material in Rutgers 250 somehow. So at that point, Tom started to work with Josh Honig to look at genetic markers. And if you're familiar with tomatoes, Many of the marking systems don't work very well because tomatoes are relatively monomorphic, except for single sequence repeats. So some other markers are very low in polymorphic, but 50% of SSRs are polymorphic in cultivated tomato. Overall, cultivated tomato is not very genetically diverse. And so Tom had Josh look at 13 polymorphic loci. I don't show them all here so I could make the table large enough to see. But as you see here, JT, Marglobe, and the F1 have similar traits at the loci. However, our last three F8 generations, and this one being the Rutgers 250, have different alleles at that point. So there's two here, and there's three in the other F8 generation. This was a Rutgers plant we got seeds from the genetics seed bank, USD, at Geneva. They have seed that went from Rutgers in 1954 to Geneva. So that's kind of the closest we can get to the original Rutgers. Rutgers itself never saved the seed, so but that has some traits that are different than JDD Marglobe. And there's lots of different seed companies selling Rutgers as an open pollinated variety. We don't know how much it's varied over time as an open pollinated. And there's also been many crosses made with it because it was so famous and interesting. So that one also has different traits at it, different alleles or loci. And so that caused us to look further at how this might have happened, because Tom and I were very careful in saving seed and going through the generations. And typically most tomatoes, cultivated tomatoes, have an inserted stigma, so they're wind-pollinated and they self-pollinate. However, Tom found some exerted stigma in his technician in the field. Oops. And so this would allow some open pollination or additional pollination from insects and wind or cross-pollination. And so looking at the stigmas in the different plants, you see we have an introduction of some inserted stigma with JDT in our population of the plants we had in the field. Tom said he's seen some studies that says Marglobe is the source of the exerted stigma. So we're not totally sure, but our observations show that the F1 had some exerting stigma, the Rutgers 250, F8 has some. We looked also at the Rutgers from NJS in 54. Some commercial varieties, checks for flavor, did not. Celebrity had one. So, That, again, the exerted stigma will allow cross-pollination in bees that do work the flowers sometimes to create something. So in discussion, our Rutgers 250 did originally from the JTD Margot cross. Both volatiles and SCR markers provide some evidence of outcrossing, and exerted stigmas are a good possibility that led to the outcrossing and introduction of non-parental genetic material. So kind of the take-home cautionary message is that not all tomatoes are self-pollinating, and we have to be careful we're using traditional methods if we assume that, and we can also have environmental things that might cause the exerted stigma. So you want to make sure you look at all your flowers, make sure they're not exerted if you're going to just do open pollinated work. Thank you. The question was, are we going ahead in saving some of the inserted stigma plants from the new variety? Good point, Tom. I don't know if you've done that yet or?
Yeah.
So protect from further outcrossing. Correct. Any other questions? The question was if the outcrossing happened in F7, we could go back and clean it up. We're not positive where it happened yet. We'll have to do more work, and Tom's doing more sequencing with the Rutgers 250 to further look at it, but we're not totally sure at this point where it happened.